Hey there, everyone. It's David Barnett from investlocalbook.com or davidcbarnett.com, website and YouTube channel where I talk about buying and selling businesses, managing businesses, local investing, anything else that people send me questions about. I was invited by a small business lending website to create a blog post about my 5 tips for small business success. And I've been in a lot of podcasts and things lately where I've talked about these types of things, and I thought it was a great opportunity to put them all together in one spot. Here on the blog site, of course, on the left-hand side is the sign up for the email list. Those of you that are on the email list will have known that I've been promoting a new online course that's coming out next month, building a business that people will want to buy. People on the email list have been given special discount pre-order offers. If it's something that you think you want to do, you need to get on the list. And most importantly, you need to pick some of the topics that interest you, because I only send out my emails to the people that are interested in that topic each week. So, top 5 things that, you know, I think are keys to small business success. Number one, it's know your gross margin, make sure it's right. I made videos about this, but I was talking with a guy the other day, a small craft manufacturer. He was making goods and then bringing them to like craft fairs and markets and selling them. And when I asked him, I said, what's the gross margin supposed to be for manufacturing versus distribution versus retail? He didn't know. He didn't understand that he was in 3 different businesses at once. And when we worked through the exercise of breaking apart the different margins for each level, that's when he realized that he was doing a really poor job as a retailer. He was doing well as a manufacturer and a distributor, but retail, he wasn't making the money that he should have as a retailer. So he was able to then see that his focus should not have been on trying to retail, but rather build wholesale accounts and get his product into other people's stores, because he would be able to do a better job simply as a manufacturer and a distributor. And that all has to come down to margin analysis, knowing what kind of gross margin you should be getting, and then making sure that you get it. And that leads us into number 2, which is to have a great system for making sure that you can reconcile your books at the end of every month and make sure that you are on track to get your margin. Another client that I work with on a regular basis, they buy a product and then install it, and they have a certain margin target that they're trying to hit. And every month they look at their financial statements and the margin is always off a little bit. And the reason for that is that they only did their inventory quarterly. Now, when you do your inventory, you can then adjust your cost of goods sold, and it helps you see on your financial statements exactly what your gross margin was. Their problem was that inventory was a long and detailed, arduous task. They implemented a better business system, and inventory has gone from taking a full day to taking about an hour and a half. Now they're able to do their inventory every month, and they're able to check their margin on a monthly basis. It makes things much quicker, and it makes it so that they can actually keep track of what they're doing every month and make sure that their margin is on track. Number 3, understand the difference between debt and equity on your income statement. Now, debt and equity is found on the balance sheet. So why am I posing this statement in this way? Well, years ago in university, I took a class on something called on innovation. And one of the things that we learned is that you can sometimes come up with amazing ideas and solutions if you ask silly questions. So the example from that class is that auto engineers were asked, how would we build a car with square wheels? And that sounds like a silly question, but when the engineers started working on that problem, they came up with independent suspension, which is now a standard feature of cars all over the world, okay? So what do I mean by debt and equity on my income statement? Well, think of it this way. If you hire somebody and you pay them a wage, they come into your business, let's say they don't do anything valuable. They don't serve customers, they don't make a sale, they really accomplish nothing, but they're there for 8 hours. Guess what? You have to pay them for the 8 hours. It's just like if you borrowed $100 at the bank and spent it foolishly and lost the money, you still have to pay it back. It's a form of debt. It has to be paid no matter what. If you compare that to equity, let's say you have an opportunity in your business, you bring in a partner who invests equity, You spend the money foolishly, it's lost, but you know what? You don't have to repay it. It's, you know, part of the equity of the business. They put the money in knowing that they were taking a risk. The same kind of thinking applies in a business if you have, for example, a salesperson earning a commission. If they come in for a day and don't do anything of value, guess what? You're not paying them. So they are actually contributing equity into your business because you only pay them when there is success. Okay. So if you start to think about how can I leverage other people's capital, resources, time, etc., then you can actually start to see equity, other people's equity in your business and how it affects your income statement. Number four, getting the most return with the least amount of investment. Big companies are great at this. They look at ways to leverage other people's capital and resources to increase their own profit. I'm always amazed at how quickly some small business people will take on debt to purchase equipment, real estate, build new locations, etc. Big companies will lease a space, for example, to leverage the equity and capital of the landlord over investing their own money. I was talking with another regular client here recently who was looking at opening a second location. And one of the things that they were talking about is the risk involved in investing in all the equipment. It's an automotive business, so they had to invest in a lot of equipment to conduct repairs. And I said, look, the second location is relatively close to the first. Why don't you just get the space, put an employee there to do estimates and to, you know, take care of customers, and then haul the cars over to the first location because you have the capacity to do the repair work at location number one. And that way you can allow the clientele to grow and you can build the business in the new location before you actually make the investment in getting that equipment. And so what they saw is that there would be a way for them to get a second location open without the big upfront capital outlay. And at the end of the day, if it didn't work, they've limited their downside risk. So again, silly questions. When you look at an expansion plan for a business or you look at something you want to do in your business, step back and say, this is great. Is there a way for me to do this with half the money? And it'll help you think in more creative ways. The name of the game is getting the maximum return from the least amount of investment. Number five, understanding the customer journey. I tell this story quite often. I'm going to tell it again because it brings everything home. When most business people think about their business, they think about their product or service and they try to make it the best possible, but they don't think about what is happening in the minds of their customers who choose to come to their location. So back in my corporate life, when I was traveling around doing meetings with clients, I had an American Express card in my wallet that was given to me by my employer for expenses. So I go into this small town restaurant and I order lunch and I eat the lunch. And then at the end of the meal, they come to collect payment and I try to use my American Express card. And guess what? They won't accept it. And I said, you know, this is a problem for me. And they're like, why? Don't you have another means to pay? And I said, well, I do have another means to pay, but here's what it means. Number one, I'm going to have to take your receipt. I'm going to have to fill out a paper expense management form. And then I'm going to have to submit that to head office. I'm going to have to wait a couple weeks for the accounts payable department to process the form and then mail me a check, which I then have to take to an ATM. If you accepted American Express, all I would have to do is sign the slip and then, you know, look at the reconciliation at the end of the month, it would be done. So by not taking American Express, this restaurant put me through a whole process that was a pain in the butt, quite frankly. So do you think that the next time I go to that town, I'm going to go to that restaurant? Of course not. These guys were actually pushing business away because they didn't accept a certain form of payment. And what is the owner of the business concerned about? Probably the quality of the food and the cleanliness, which are important, but it's not the whole reason that people choose to go to one business over another. You have to think about what is happening in the minds of the people that choose to go to your business, and more importantly, what's going on in the minds of the people who aren't? Why are they not going to your business? What barriers are you creating whether intentionally or inadvertently, that are preventing people from going to your business. Anyway, hope you enjoyed that. My top five tips for small business success. And don't forget, if you're not on the email list, get yourself on there today. It's everyone on the email list gets videos like this 3 days before the public. And that's where I put all the news about my newest products and promotions, etc. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.